originally from Korea,
okay.
Seoul. It's a heavily populated city. And now I live in London, but yeah. So because I see this similarities between these two cities and also differences.
Yeah.
And because I'm a theater artist, but I tend to work with all things, all the contexts. Urban environment. How we use objects, how we bring the objects into the context, more in our context, more than before, more than ever. I mean, in terms of contemporary art, that's how I feel that, especially about performance, that the object is used frequently. In line with the presence of the person, of the performer. So,
well, what do you mean by objects? That's not the question. What do you mean by objects? Is that because you first, there are really few things happening. There's, you have the location.
Yes.
You have this thing that you call art.
That's a really good question. Probably we should start again.
I'm sorry.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi.
I know.
How are you doing, Sharon?
I know you at all.
Hi, I'm Michelle.
I'm Michelle.
Do you know each other?
No,
sorry.
Sorry. Michelle. Right, I see. We were just talking about...
is this on? Who's going to make the notes? You are? You have to do it.
Right, I see. I'm not really good, but...
I'll do notes if you like, if you would feel happier.
Do you mind then?
So do you want to talk through the question again?
Yeah, just to talk about the background why I brought up this question, really, because I'm more a theatre person than an artist, but I tend to work with objects in my performance, and I'm originally from Seoul, Korea, which is a heavily populated city, and now I live in London, and I somehow see the differences and similarities between those two cities. And
what sort of things?
I mean, like, I don't know, I guess that the difference lies in the people, how habitualize their routine through the object, and also the space where I walk in, like, for example, for me, that London is, because it's historically very old city, and when I came here first time, I found that the roads are much narrower than Seoul, because the roads were built for the not for the cars in the beginning. It was more for the other means of vehicles. For example, like horses, and that was actually very essentially very interesting for me as well. And we were just talking about Eugene asked what objects means in this context, and I think it's really important to start, because that's I was just popped in my mind. I was just thinking about everyday objects that we use, like a cover table.
Lucia Farinata.
Hi.
Michelle Lasseter.
Hi.
Hi.
Jubilee. Eugene Mackey.
Is the object in urban environment, yeah?
So basically what I was talking about, how the object is used, I was thinking more about that the objects, because we are very used to the object, and probably provoked by this urban environment, we tend to bring more objects into our creation, like arts or performance context. And that was kind of my presupposition. But
how are we used to objects? I don't think we're used to objects. We think we are.
Right.
You know, Because when you're talking about objects, he's... Yeah, I don't think we are very much used to objects. That's basically what our perception tells us. Because objects has different layers in what it is and what it can do.
So what kind of object in your mind when you think about
when
you're not used to?
I don't really know. I mean,
but that could be applied to any object, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because what you're saying is there's a way that we interact with an object and how we see the cup. And I use it as a cup, I don't use it as something else.
Exactly.
Is that sort of...
In a way, because it's also because of language, it's like how far do you go with it in terms of that particular object or in the context of location, if you're dealing with environment, is how do you create a relation between those two, or do you need to create a relation in order to know what that object or those objects are doing in terms of performance. That's why I think that it's that the normal thing to say is that we are familiar with objects, but I don't think that's it's easy as that sounds.
You don't think so?
I don't think it's just as easy as that, because I deal with objects, but also there's something about misunderstanding that objects plays with,
So was your interest in to place object, to use the object as a performative element in urban space? No.
I was talking about any objects really, not necessarily in art or performance context, but my presupposition was that because we are used to these urban environments, probably that's why we talk more about objects, or we create through the objects, or we are mediated by the objects. I mean, for example, when we were in ancient time, if we talk about that too, we probably habitualize our lives with animals, and we probably have more connection with animals, for example. But I think that in a way, because we're overwhelmed by objects around us, that's in a way that we find strategies to resist or contextualize or find a pattern through the object. So I don't know if I'm...
Well, I think clear. I think that this is my observation in urban environments and built environment, and above all in big cities, that we are becoming, our bodies is really has a lot of prostheses now. The iPhone is like the computer we is so incorporated in everything we do. So in a way,
are the prostheses objects?
Yeah, then it's a question. Yeah. Are prostates,
Are they part of us, or are they separate from us?
Yeah, that is a question. Exactly. I think, because you're talking about strategy of resistance, but those kind of objects help us to cope better, with the rhythm of the city, so we need, I don't know, thinking about the navigator, the GPS system, or stuff like that,
I think it's interesting that it kind of objects works as an extension of body of an environment that I think that's probably more like a computer is a tool that kind of extension of our brain, for example.
But the way in which, upstairs we were talking about the fact that also we using this time traveling for using the tube as a kind of bathroom, make up and doing things, and the time construction, the time.
It's quite interesting. The time is very important.
Yeah, totally. Time, I think, is one of the main factor through which you create new object, is it? It's the pressure of time and
And how do you become aware that you're creating a new object? Is it like a daily routine? Is that what you mean? Because if you're talking about going to get a tube or going across the world, for example, is it something that your brain sort of is active or is sort of made to do?
It's sort of habitual processes.
Yeah. How does that work? In terms of performance, obviously.
What do you mean in terms of performance?
I mean, like your daily activity in terms of performance, how does that work in relation to? That's what I meant. Because you said something about time, and I felt.
Yeah.
That's crucial.
Well, those kind of technological objects, most of the time they deal with time, not being faster, reaching places, reaching more people, isn't it? It's like to potentiate your ability. I don't know, our tool, I don't know, maybe we have to think about how it works in the different context, the natural context.
What was your reaction when the two artists once called themselves living sculptors?
Living sculpture.
Living sculpture.
Yeah. Living judge.
What was your reaction to that? Because it's so.
That's so cute.
Cuteness. Disgust. Just put that. With laughter. Yes, but they presented as this living, as something that was a sculpture that moved. And then, so they're an artwork, were an artwork. But now cities are full of people dressed like sculptures in order to earn money.
Yeah, and there's
by
another
not moving.
Yeah, the mammal kind of type, yeah.
It's funny because there's this actual physical sculpture in, where is it? Is it in Trafalgar Square? It's somewhere. And it moves every two minutes or every couple of seconds. So it's like it's a statue, but it's like it has a timer and it moves.
Okay, so it's a real
figure.
It's a real figure.
Not a real person.
No, there's two. I'm moving from the two artists. I'm talking about another thing. Because you have the two artists calling themselves
a living sculpture.
Living sculpture. Then you have the physical thing itself that's been manipulated with time.
But is it the sculpture, a sculpture that is a sculpture that is automated so it appears to move? It's not a living being that doesn't move and thus appears to be a sculpture.
No.
Okay, this is a sculpture.
Yeah, it's a sculpture.
Okay, so living sculpture, carry on.
Yeah, and there's a timer and it actually moves. It has a sensor as well, so it's like when you come near it, it actually moves.
What fascinated me of urban environment is also a lot of discharge objects, the unwanted objects. The object trash in the street.
Right.
New York, you should go to New York. It's like they have the whole street.
Yeah, but here too, don't worry. I pick up a lot of stuff from the street of neighborhood.
Yeah, Dawson, you have a lot of stuff as well. I'm sure that she had quite a lot of stuff with her.
So.
Isn't sculpture that moves no longer a sculpture?
What do you mean? What?
A moving sculpture?
I think it's still a sculpture.
Is it still a sculpture?
I think it is. So is a person pretending to be a sculpture in order to get people to give...
It's still a person.
Is it still a person or is it a sculpture? Is that a sculpture?
No, it's still a person who... For temporary, you take the temporary position of a sculptor because he's actually being displaying himself as a sculptor.
But does
it's the subject object, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can they be equal up, reversed? That's sort of what you're getting at.
Yeah, because you say performing the sculpture, which is like not necessarily I am a sculpture, but I'm performing the role of the sculpture. on the subject.
Just picking up on your other point, which I'm not quite sure where it goes, but I think there is something really interesting about temporality in objects.
Yeah.
And I think that is, and also this came up in the previous discussion, which is also a thing about the point at which we want to recognise something as an object and the power that has, and when we don't recognise things as objects, even though they are objects.
Yeah.
And that seems to be a different sort of relationships. And I think, you know, when you were saying that thing about defamiliarisation, I think that there is something really interesting in that when that falls away, then what opens up around that subject-object relationship when we really constitute something that is an object as an object. There's something interesting that opens up.
But is being a, can just go back to movement, is something that's still more likely to be an object than something that doesn't move?
No.
What about a car? How do you define a car?
It's a crystallization of inanimate, isn't it?
Yes, inanimate. Okay, yeah. So I mean,
but I can see.
I'm trying not to say animate and inanimate because I sort of want to avoid talking about the uncanny.
And that anthropomorphic.
I'd have to do.
So say it again, the question, Karen, please. Sorry.
Is something that doesn't move more likely to be an object? Now, if it's a person who doesn't move for a long time, you might eventually go and discover they're dead.
Mm-hmm.
And they're still a person, they're just a dead person. Whatever your relationship with them will sort of determine the subjective relation. But is an object defined by its not moving? Even a car, because although it kind of moves,
I don't think so. I think breathing is very important.
Yeah.
Think about people that is they can move, the people that are in a wheelchair or people that are in coma.
Yeah. I mean, look at the futuristic times, you know, futurism when they were interested in movement and an active role for something, an object, you know, is this idea of, I think, it's not really the question of if it becomes an object or not. I think they're both useful tools. I think it's quite hard because it's like language, isn't it? It's like it has multiple meanings, but at the same time, you need both, in a way. Because something that moves is still an object, just that it has another residue or another sort of another role to participate.
But, sorry, I'm going to persist.
Yeah, persist.
Unmoving object. Now, objects, what if it's an object that moves, but it moves because something's done to it? It's thrown.
Like a metronome.
It's wound up. Petrol is put into it. Something done to it to make it move, but it doesn't do anything, actively seek movement. It has no desire to move. Something, other agency, has to be brought into play to move it. And is that how we might know it's an object? Because in order to move, something.
Some other force has acted on it.
Some other force has to be employed.
Yeah, it's quite interesting, actually.
Is that an object? Is it always an object? I think the person in the wheelchair who can't move, well, actually, is treated as an object much of the time. The handicapped, the person who can't move, the person who can't speak, the person who is immobilised becomes a thing.
Yeah, you need care, you need always somebody to actually
someone
feel.
Else. The moment someone else has to some other thing. The wheelchair, another person.
Yeah, yeah.
Something else has to be brought in.
But that also touches on the denigration, doesn't it? So yes. A subject-object relationship, yes. So there's a denigration in the object because that plays into the superiority of the subject. I mean, I don't think it's like that, but that's what gets played out in that particular relationship. And so if you have your own volition, there is a superiority.
Yes, if you're able to move without anything else having to be brought into play to allow that, you're more likely to have a subject position.
You're allowed
a subject.
And this is
but that's about this kind of idea of moving objects with the mind.
Move that cup.
Let's all try a moment of levitation.
Right, let's make that cut move, all of us.
Just the
you're not trying hard enough. No, you're it's gone. She thinks I mean it. Let's see if we can make it move.
I think it's really interesting.
She's not doing it.
Sorry.
You won't work in this.
All of us do it. We can join hands. Right,
I'm a little bit hot. Excuse my sweaty hands.
We're going to make. One of you isn't trying, I can tell. You see, it's nothing. What about telekinesis? Go on, carry on with your point.
Can you write that down?
What?
Can we try to make the object move?
We joined hands, concentrated. And tried to make.
I took my cup.
That's your move. We failed.
I'm sorry, I don't think I'm
conceptualising very well.
Yeah, because it's really interesting to see how, in a way that psychologically, how we put these objects in distance, that way we kind of find the right moment, or what when you talked about temporality and object, when we find the right moment, when the moment arrives into us, then we kind of see things and objects in different way. But I kind of like to bring more context than where I started from, where the question from. Because in here, maybe that when we talk about differences in different cities, perhaps does language work to make that difference at all, you think? Even though it's the same object, you see, that the way we you know, the word or how we categorize the cup, maybe does it, produce any differences? So I just wanted to know the background or your experience, where you're from. How can I say? For me, if I start from myself, then because my native language is Korean, not English, and I see this kind of what interests me when I use in English is that one word can mean many different things. Like, the other day I was looking up the wire, for example, and it actually means the electrical, wires. And when we talk about the computer, we can talk about wireless, and we can talk about the lines that makes the current deliver the electrical current, and all somehow in the different way when I looked at wired person, it can be talk about someone very edgy and very nervous, and that's all very interesting to me because it must be starting from the wire as the object, but it somehow it leaps into the person who's very nervous and tense all the time. And I was just wondering how those different the layers of meaning provoked by the object, actually, what kind of senses does it provoke into you? Maybe does it somehow relate it to the locality that where we live in, or the and the environment we are in? Well, one of the the speakers, it said it's a shell. It's called also porcellana, which is an Italian word. And I'm not sure. I think porcelain it comes from mud, isn't it?
Clay.
So, and so it's for me, it's quite striking how sometimes not languages they can really, you know, they can cross cultures. I don't know how to put it. I'm trying to kind of enter in that question, but
because electric wire is just wire, literally. It's ton. Ton means electricity, and sun is what line. So I can't really. It's not.
You can't say in Korean that someone's wired.
No.
Okay. You can only say it in English. But you can understand it.
Yeah, because I'm using.
Because you are using English.
Yeah.
But in Korean, you can understand electric wire. But to say someone is wired.
Yeah. No, we don't have it.
If I spoke Korean and I said in my fluent Korean, that person is wired.
We don't use. Like we don't put the word wire into that context.
There is no way to say it, basically.
There's no way to say it.
Yeah.
For any object, is there any way? Okay, so that's an action of electricity that's being shorthanded to the wire to describe a person's state. Is there any equivalent to that in Korean, where some sort of action or some characteristic of an object would be used to describe an emotional or human sort of condition?
If I talk about just the Johnson wire, no.
No, but it's a rather...
Another term.
Another sort of...
That says someone is edgy, tight.
Or even some other sort of sleepy. It doesn't really matter what the state is, but is it possible in Korean language to use something that is an object state or a process state to describe a human state? You see what I mean? A human.
I guess that's it. Well, if we want to do that, we probably put two different words together. So in a way, the different layering of images, rather than putting in, you know, one word and using different ways. So,
and the two words together,
it's
generally kind of a name and a verb, or
it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah, but it happens a lot when a young generation speaks in slang or you know.
Because why it comes from that, or comes from that
sort of. It's interesting when you talked about action, that to the person putting in. And how we relate, it's in a way, it's how we relate ourselves to the object, isn't it? And we held the object and we drink it, and that action itself can speak something about the person or the quality. Because literally, for example, like pig-headed is the right expression.
Yes.
Because that was very interesting for me, that in a way it contains some metaphor, that pig-headed, very stubborn person, right? But because I learn English by dictionary or, you know, from books, so I'm quite curious to know about what kind of senses appeals to people inside the brain.
Sorry to interrupt, but I think the etymology of metaphorai, it means to go from one place to another.
Yes.
So there is mobility again.
Yes, it's mobility.
Yeah.
And I keep plugging this book by China Nieville. It's titled A New One, because it's all about a language the insistence of a language that doesn't have metaphor, where language has to be true.
Yeah.
And I just told the story a while ago, so I won't tell it again. But the last part of the book is about trying to make metaphor to release people from this one-to-one correspondence. It's pig-headed. For someone's psychotic, if you said, Michelle is so pig-headed, for psychotic, you would be a woman with a pig, with the head of a pig, and that would be very disturbing.
Everything is literal. And so you have to be very careful not to use any metaphor because it could be so traumatic.
Yeah.
Because it's as though you're speaking the truth.
So is it because that it contains strong images that comes into our mind instantly?
No, there's no image. It's not that a strong image would come into the mind of the psychotic. If the psychotic would take it absolutely literally as the truth, Michelle is pig-headed. And this would be very surprising when the psychotic says, I would look at Michelle and I would be very disturbed because she doesn't have a pig's head. So what's happened to your pig's head? It's gone. And where's the pig? You know, it would provoke some kind of traumatic relation with language.
Do you understand?
It's not that it would create the image of a pig.
But it doesn't it would be internalized directly. So if I'm psychotic, you say you have a pig head.
Yeah.
I would feel myself as I'm a pig. You know, I'm a pig.
Yes.
You make me feel like I am a pig.
Yes.
This is the internalization.
I must look like a pig.
Yeah.
I am a pig. Yeah.
There's no separation from the language and.
So the language, the literal sense itself, actually hits your senses.
It's not necessarily negative.
Well, again, in psychosis, that person is so wired, there would be the sense that someone had wires in them. You know, if you're psychotic, you might have had electroshock treatment.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what you'll remember. Oh my God, you know, this is. You know,
Second meaning is just one meaning.
Yeah. So there's no levels of things.
The materiality of the word actually brings.
It's real. No, it's absolutely real. There's no.
So it's a kind of.
It's not a symbol any longer.
Yeah.
It's a symbol that can't be understood. You see what I mean? Why is someone saying this when it's not true?
So it's like in between materiality and the abstraction, and you know the word as abstraction. So when we kind of come across this literal meaning and the object, it can actually provoke this sense of the.
And it happens in translation, doesn't it? When something that's an expression in English, that's a sort of saying, when you say it, try and find the same meaning in the same way of saying it, you have to use a different set of words. And I can't think of the example. I had to translate something last year, and I just did it from French to English, and I did it quite literally, and I just couldn't think of anything to do. And I gave it to my copy editor, and he came back with "the moon is made." It would be like "the moon is made of green cheese." And I can't remember what the expression was in French, but it was trying to find, and it was a different way of saying it. You know, it's a completely different simile in this case, but it carries the same meaning.
Yeah. You can use another metaphor.
And the other metaphor it carries no relation to the one in the other language.
No.
Now I think this is quite important. How do we actually get this into where we started from? Because I think we're drifting, but this
through really, metaphorai. The name of public transport in Greece. The buses are called metaphorai.
This is what I said. The original etymology of the word metaphorai means to use
to get from one place to another. Right. So bus,
use that as a
metaphor
stop. This is Arto. I want to talk about that in his book.
Yes,
a lot.
I think so. I'm not good on Latour.
No, Michel Desserteaux, the everyday life.
Oh, it's Desserteaux. Yes, sorry, I think it's Latour.
No,
it's Michel Desserteaux, the practice of everyday life, which is about urban space.
Yeah, I think it's very important at this point.
Yes,
so we got back to that.
Yeah, but it's also the other book on location and how location becomes an active role in our everyday life. Mm. You know, how we penetrate and exit this thing, you know, this environment. Mm. What you were talking about just a couple minutes ago is quite interesting because it's also about perception, isn't it? It's not just so much about language itself. Because if someone says you're pink or something, do you know, is that how you perceive that idea? No way.
I think what she was trying to say that it's psychotic.
I know what she's trying to say. I'm just saying it's also that I think
perception is another level.
Exactly.
It's another level.
It's psychotic, doesn't it? Have.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Yeah, it has different levels. That's what I was trying to say. Yes.
Yeah, there's another level which is perception, which is more the phenomenological way.
But if I were to say, I'm sorry, Michelle, we make you the
pig. No, it's fine. I never expected this to happen. I was sitting here with a pig's head on. This wasn't going to happen today.
If I were to say to you, Michelle, you're just so pig-headed. That would be different than me saying, "Oh, Michelle, you're just so pig-headed."
Yeah.
You know, there's also,
there you go.
Is that what
there
you mean?
Go.
It's
yeah.
the delivery
yeah.
as well
yeah.
that will carry, not for psychotic, because she's not psychotic.
Not yet.
you can't become psychotic. You either are or you aren't. Yeah. There's no borderline.
That's a relief.
What about the opposite way? I'm saying that it's a kind of the example where we kind of take this materiality from the object into the context of our everyday life, and we metaphorize that the situation by putting this materiality we recognize, starting from the peak. And then it goes, it's kind of putting over the layers above this the image of the personality. And it works that way in many cases. What about the opposite way? I mean, how do we recognize objects, for example? Like, how language works to recognize the object, for example? Like, we can say, I think that how we define or how we kind of visualize this object in a way is that because we know it's hard, it's made of hard material, so in a way words or language works in a very latent way that like hard or for example like paper, it kind of subconsciously knows that it's foldable and it's floaty, it's got soft, it's got fragility. But when we talk, when we say paper, probably these words come at play to recognize its object. I think that goes the same to the cup as well. But I'm just curious to know, it's just a question that whether is there any object that's in different cultures that the kind of work different ways. Although the paper is universal material and universal object,
okay.
But the way that we call about these qualities can be different in different languages. And I don't know if I'm doing that very well.
Our time is being called, so
yeah.
We're left with that question.
This will be another kind of discussion. Yeah.
Okay, good.